Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Twanda Black, your host. Were you aware that we have a conference on financing for development? Well, if you're not, you're about to hear what that's all about, and it's about to happen in the next week. Faustine Wabwire joins us, and I'm not sure if I got that right. Wabwire? Is that correct?
Wabwire, that's correct.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Senior Foreign Assistance Policy Analyst with Bread for the World, and you're about to go to Ethiopia for this conference.
Absolutely. In a matter of hours, actually, just counting, I will be leaving for Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia, tomorrow morning to attend the third Financing for Development conference that will be held next week in Addis Ababa. You know, just to give a sense of what this is about, it's actually a historic summit. It brings together high-level representations, including heads of state and government. And the purpose of the conference really is to assess the progress and implementing previous agreements on how we finance development, how we achieve the ambitious goals we have set, for example, ending hunger and extreme poverty by 2030.
And, you know, I know everybody comes together and brings their ideas together, but do you ever just see an idea and say, you know, that's so simple it might work? Because everything has so many moving pieces to it, especially when you talk about world hunger.
Absolutely. And I think what we've learned over the last 15 years in implementing the Millennium Development Goals, which, as you know, expired this September, is that we now recognize exactly what you said, the complexity of these issues. When you're talking anything global, there's just so many moving pieces to it. So, for instance, it's impossible to end poverty by 2030 when close to 800 million people still live in hunger, experience hunger on a daily basis. So the extent to which we coordinate these efforts, including financing these initiatives, investing in agriculture, has been proven, for example, to have more power in reducing poverty at the same time. So as you reduce hunger in developing countries, you're also likely to reduce poverty at the same time. So it's also about targeting and identifying sectors, for example, that might have those multiplier effects on communities and in economies around the world.
You know, it is such a snowball effect because one thing affects another. So when you talk about when you talk about education, even you've got to talk about, you know, employment. You've got to talk about that home environment, how mom and dad are working. You know, all of that is it's really interesting how it's also connected.
Absolutely. It's great that you mentioned education because, I mean, one of the opportunities that actually allow people to be self-sufficient in future and participate in productive activities is through good foundations in education, for example, good background from the home, the family to the school environment and upward into the job market. So there is not one single bullet that will fix all of this, but I think that interdisciplinary approach that will bring all of these different efforts together to move us in the path that we would like to go.
Absolutely. And I know that a part of that is also protecting the planet that we live on, because some of this includes, you know, energy. How are we going to do that? How are we going to do this with the energy and protect the planet as well?
You know, it's I think it's really timely that we have to grapple with these big issues, difficult as they may be. And as you may be aware of the Pope's latest encyclical, Pope Francis calls all of us to be mindful of how we take care of the planet. He very specifically calls or appeals for, you know, us to seek a sustainable and integral development.
Absolutely.
And in this, he's asking for ways of mitigating the effects of land degradation, for example, because all of these are actually contributing to the increasing of hunger, for example, in communities who depend on agriculture.
Right.
So in some way, we think about climate change as a thing of the future, but it actually is happening right now. And unfortunately, it threatens to undermine some of the progress we've made, including investing in agriculture. Mm-hmm. I have seen communities both in my country of origin, Kenya. I have traveled to Ghana and spoken to farmers who just don't know what to do anymore because they are toiling so hard and can hardly produce enough to feed
yes.
their families as a direct result of the changing climate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And even, you know, drought is even here in the United States. So it's all over. We can't think of climate as a future thing. It is absolutely happening as we speak.
It is happening now, and
yeah.
it's happening here as well.
Yes.
And what's good about the next set of goals, what we are calling sustainable development goals, is that they are calling for a universal application of this.
Mm-hmm.
So like you say, the drought we've seen in California is affecting people right here,
absolutely.
Back home here in the United States. When you think of extreme weather conditions like Superstorm Sandy, for example, devastating consequences on businesses and homes
yes.
and families.
Yes.
And it's costing us a lot more to put back the infrastructure that's damaged by this extreme weather. So I think that it's timely that Pope Francis brings this message to our attention and to the attention of world leaders that if we are indeed committed to ending hunger and poverty by 2030, we cannot continue to ignore climate change.
That's right. We won't be able to ignore it. Let's shift for a moment, though, because, you know, we're talking about all of these changes and how do we make it all work together. But money is a huge part of this. How do we finance this when you're talking about on a world platform? You know, where does the financing come for so many of these programs that you look at?
So this is a really interesting time that we are in several ways. One is because we have had opportunities to learn over the last 15 years what works, what doesn't work. So we're likely to reduce the inefficiencies in financing that, you know, may have existed over the last 15 years. At the same time, on the flip side of that, then challenges are increasing. There is more fragility in countries around the world, for example. A lot more people need support.
That's right.
We have an influx of refugees today than we've ever had
mm-hmm.
in the history of development.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this conference seeks to hopefully achieve is to ensure that we pull together as many sources of finance as possible. One of the biggest issues that's being discussed right now is how do we support domestic revenue generation
mm-hmm.
in countries, for
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm.
So as external partners and donors continue to support development objectives in countries, what is the role of countries themselves? There's also discussion about stemming illicit financial flows from poor countries.
Mm.
And I think this speaks to the global financial system.
Mm-hmm.
We need to close those loopholes that allow for tax evasion, for example. Bread for the World is just about to put out a paper that shows that countries, for example, Africa as a continent, loses more through illicit flows than it actually receives in foreign aid, for example.
You know, I'm glad you brought it up because I was, you know, I want to ask about that because we know that in a lot of countries, there are some illegal things going on. And so as people are sending aid into those countries, it's not getting to the people that it needs to get to. And we're all wondering, hey, we help with that. What's happening here?
Right.
Yeah.
And it speaks to institutions. So the paper that we're about to launch, actually, I just wrote this paper, is about strengthening the capacity of the public sector.
Mm.
We want countries to be able, number one, to generate revenues and be able to track how money is collected and spent,
yes.
how services are delivered to the citizens, and also strengthening the capacity of citizens in countries to hold their own citizens, their own governments accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing to the issue about the global illicit flows is I think we have a broken financial system globally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of money is being siphoned. So on one hand, I think when you talk about corruption, we only think of the local that's happening in country.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we ought to address corruption head on at the global level as well. In-country resources are just as important, but if there's a lot of flows, capital flows that are
right.
leaving countries,
mm-hmm.
then I think it does not help to continue giving money to countries when a lot of that money is leaving the country
That's
anyway
right.
and not delivering services for the mm-hmm. citizens.
Because although we have more poor people than we've ever had, we've got more really wealthy people as well.
That's the inequality challenge mm-hmm. that I think even Pope Francis, I think, highlights in several of his statements he's made publicly. And we are all aware of this. I mean, we see inequality
yes.
at a deeper level than we've ever seen in our own, you know, communities,
mm-hmm.
even
mm-hmm.
in across countries and, you know, in regions. It's really increasing. And I think that in itself is a problem. Not just because someone has more than the other, but I think it's also on a global scale, you think of instability.
Yes.
It's impossible for us to achieve equitable development, peace, and security on all of those goals that we aspire when we ignore the increasing inequality in our world today.
Absolutely. Well, you're going on to the conference. How can people learn and learn more about Bread for the World, but also about the third International Conference on Financing for Development, so they can see what came out of the conference? What were some of the solutions? Where can they go?
We urge our members, viewers, to continue to follow Bread for the World, breadforbread.org. We will be tweeting. I will be live tweeting from Addis Ababa. We will be putting out blogs on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And also people can track FFD, hashtag FFD3.
FSD.
As a Twitter hashtag for the official conference.
All right. Faustine Wabweri, thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us about this great information. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Twana. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Twanda Black. And joining me this morning, Katie Libby, Vice President of Consumer Insights with Allianz Life Insurance Company of North America. And she's here to talk about some of the things that elders face when it comes to financial abuse. And we do know, we hear it, we see it all the time, that our seniors are just being scammed and victimized all over the place in different areas. So you guys have done a study, Katie. So tell us about the study.
Yes, we have. We really wanted to get a clear picture of the problem because we think the frequency is growing as more and more baby boomers become senior citizens and become a target-rich environment for people that want to target them for financial abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did some research. We wanted to understand the problem of financial abuse from the victim's viewpoint, as well as friends and family of victims, and had a lot of good information.
The really serious thing about this is that only 8% of elders ages 65 say they've been a victim.
Right. I think I've seen other stories that say, or other surveys that say 1 in 44 people report it, and
mm-hmm.
that's very similar to other forms of abuse
mm-hmm.
where the victim feels humiliated or embarrassed
right.
or that maybe they were they did something to contribute to the
mm-hmm.
cause of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what we say is seniors are more willing to talk about health and their illnesses than they are about their financial situation and maybe some, you know, suspect things that are going on.
Absolutely. I know my grandmother's 88, and you better not ask her about her money. Period. Nothing.
I know. It was an admirable kind of attribute a while ago, but as people age, it's really important that they don't become isolated from others that know what to expect from them. So having friends and family members that know, you know, what they're doing with their bank accounts, mm-hmm. what their plans are for their house, their power of attorney and things like that, the more people that they talk to, really the more people that are looking out for that senior and can help protect them.
You better know it. You worked with the Better Business Bureau, and you've developed Preventing Elder Financial Abuse Tip Sheet. I'm sure those were some of the tips that you just said. But, you know, all kids, if it's your grandmother, your auntie, or whoever it is, you need to be taking a look at this, correct?
That's right. And we've got a lot of information and resources on our website. At Allianz Life, we take it very seriously, and we want to begin talking to as many people as possible mm-hmm. so that we can keep our seniors safe from this kind of exploitation. On the website, we developed a brochure with the Better Business Bureau that's got tips for seniors and for caregivers. It goes through some of the red flags that anybody connected with an elderly family member or mm-hmm. loved one can look out for. And then the other thing that we're doing at Allianz Life is we've got a big culture amongst our employees for volunteerism. And so we have people that have signed up and become trained on a presentation we developed that can be delivered at senior centers or other kind of community centers for anybody, really, seniors or for their family members mm-hmm. to understand a little bit more about elder financial abuse and how to prevent it.
Oh, yeah. We've got to safeguard them. You know, even down to if there's a storm and these scammers go door to door, you know, telling the elderly or something is falling off or I can put your gutter back up or whatever. Give me $5,000, you know. And if they're there alone, they don't know what to ask for. Sometimes they feel intimidated.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, I even have friends that I work with whose parents, you know, at a moment of just, you know, not thinking too hard about right. it and trusting somebody, they'll give out, you know, their Social Security number
yeah.
or their bank account number, and then 1 minute later think, well, why did I do that? That was really stupid.
Right.
And, you know, it's not only just the stranger scammers that are the problem.
Family.
You also have to be careful because a lot of times, unfortunately, a lot of this crime is done by friends and family
That's
of
right.
the senior.
That's right. Caregivers, friends and family. You'd be amazed. Well, you wouldn't be amazed, but we are all amazed by the numbers. It's staggering what family is doing to seniors. They figure, they don't need that money. I sat in on a court case where a young man actually said that. He said, well, she didn't need the money anyway. She doesn't go anywhere. He had stolen her money out of her account.
Right. We've had some of them just say, well, I was just taking my inheritance early.
Yes.
So they kind of justified it that way, which is just so unfortunate.
It
it's
is.
A crime.
It is. It really is a crime. And we really need to think more about that. Talk to mom and dad. We're not asking, you know, mom and dad how much money you got in the bank. But,
right.
you know, talk to them about what's going on out here. Somebody comes and knocks on your door, you know.
Right. And if they are a victim, you know, make sure that it gets reported
yes.
to the local law enforcement or the state governor or attorney general, somebody like that, because, you know, like other forms of abuse, people are just reluctant to report it. They're embarrassed. They're humiliated.
Yeah.
And they're afraid that now it's a red flag that family members will think that they can't manage their own finances.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything in the survey that you did or the report that you did that was just so eye-opening for you?
Well, I think some of the verbatim comments that we got in the survey were very eye-opening
yeah.
in terms of why people didn't want to report what was going on if they were taken advantage of by a family member.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to cause strife within the family. They didn't want the person who had committed the elder fraud to not like them anymore and stop talking to them.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a sad situation because it's really sometimes people that are very, very trusted family members
mm-hmm.
That are betraying these seniors. And it's just, that's why we believe that the more people that are talking to people like your mother about their finances, the more that, you know, something, if it's suspicious or strange or unusual, it'll come up in conversation and you can talk to your siblings, you know, maybe a third-party family friend or something like that to
mm-hmm.
say, did you know anything about the second mortgage?
Yeah.
they might be getting themselves into.
By the way, that's my grandmother, 88, that you can't ask about her money. My mom, she's okay.
Okay.
But, you know, that's a totally different, the traditionals, they're a totally different generation, and that's just something you don't do.
Right, right. But, you know, and as younger generations are coming on the scene, they're just like with Facebook and other things, they're much, much more open to sharing
yes.
everything about their life.
Yes. That's so true. So give us information again on how to find the brochure, Preventing Elder Financial Abuse Tip Sheet, and any other information that you want us to have.
Sure. You can go to a website that we set up that has a lot of the information on the study itself and also the Better Business Bureau brochure. It's www.allianzlife.com/SOS, which stands for Safeguarding Our Seniors.
Okay.
And again, you know, it's got a lot of red flags to be looking out for and tips for not only the seniors to protect themselves, but also if you are a caregiver, you know, what are some of the things that you should be doing to really help look into the financial security of the person that you're caring for, not just their health.
Right, right. Thank you so much. Katie Libby, Vice President of Consumer Insights at Allianz. Thank you so much for joining us.